chips are down. These civilized people, they'll eat each other.
You are the unvaccinated. You are the problem. It is the unvaccinated who are the problem. Period. End of story.
The only people that you can blame, the only people you can blame, this isn't shaming, this is the truth. Maybe they should be shamed, but the unvaccinated.
It's time to start blaming the unvaccinated folks, not the regular folks.
Anyone you came into contact with will blame you, as will the rest of us who have done the right thing by getting vaccinated.
Because frankly, we know that we can't trust the unvaccinated.
I think it's time to get our moral house in order, Anderson. It's the unvaccinated who are the threat.
All those vaccinated folks are going to start wearing masks to protect the unvaccinated folks. It's called a Christian value.
You're basically punishing the vaccinated for the sins of the unvaccinated.
People are not behaving honorably. The unvaccinated are basically saying, well, it's open season for me. I can do whatever I want as well.
The unvaccinated are basically beating their breasts and running around the country saying, we don't care, we're living free, and so forth.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin.
The unvaccinated, a group that includes children and people acting like children. And the rest of us are starting to get pissed off.
The vaccinated feel the unvaccinated are making me upset or angry.
This is not about freedom or personal choice.
Well, my freedom is being kind of disturbed here. No. Screw your freedom.
The other day, Howard Stern weighed in with a much different approach. Take a look.
When are we going to stop putting up with the idiots in this country and just say, you now, it's mandatory to get vaccinated. Their freedom.
But you're treading on our freedom and you're making other people sick, and really you're killing other people.
The anti-vaxxers, they seem to have a thing for death and home remedies.
The anti-maskers turned anti-vaxxers are not just putting their own lives at risk. If that was the issue, we could just say that we can watch them compete to win Placer's show in the Darwin Awards.
We have to start doing things for the greater good of society and not for idiots who think that they can do their own research.
And don't get me started on the lunatics who won't take any of the COVID vaccines.
Life is too short to be an ass. Life is way too short to be ignorant of the promise of something that is helping people worldwide.
Maybe you're doing it because you're disconnected or disorganized. Maybe you have some sympathetic psychological reasons, but maybe you're just being antisocial.
Oh, you can't shame them. You can't call them stupid. You can't call them silly. Yes, they are.
Those who are not vaccinated will end up paying the price.
The unvaccinated should be taxed. They should pay more for health care.
We need to start looking at the choice to remain unvaccinated the same as we look at driving while intoxicated.
We're going to see, and I've said, almost two types of America.
Dr. Fauci said that if hospitals
Roman, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hi.
My name is Tim, the Fakeologist. We're on the pre-show now. I am streaming right now. This is just where we set things up and say hi, and then we start a video broadcast where I video cast my screen. I don't use a webcam, so you don't have to either unless you want to.
Oh, I don't care. Whatever you like to do, it's your show.
Okay, well, I'll leave it at that for you to stream your face if you want, unless you have a screen you want to show, or I think you're going to...
Well, eventually, yeah. Let's see if we can do that. Let's see, do I have a share thing? Share screen.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, 1 second.
Do you have a headset at all with a mic, or...
Yeah. It's not working out.
Well, it's coming through on, it sounds like it's on your microphone on your computer.
No, it's a...
Oh, it is coming through on that one?
It's a good mic, but maybe not. Let's see, maybe not.
I just want to make sure it's hooked up by going to settings. Maybe it is. If you could just, could you lean into it? I just want to see if it is picking that one up.
Yeah, can you hear anything? It might have done something different.
No, I think it's picking it up. Okay, that's good. I think it's, maybe just double check it's picking up that mic.
Yeah, I'm just looking to see where there's a setup.
Yeah, settings and audio.
No, it's good. It's picking it up.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
I guess it's just the room is a little echoey, but that's cool.
Yeah, well, it's not that professional.
No, that's fine. Now, are you going to... I thought we'd just do a general conversation about your past book, Dissolving Illusions. That's really...
Yeah, we can just do that. We don't have to do this presentation crap. That's whatever you want to do.
What was the presentation on? I think I watched it on Germ.
Oh, it'd be basically the same. So let's not do that then. No problem.
Yeah, it's no problem. It's whatever you want to do. I just like a general discussion. I've been looking into this for a long time. And I was just playing a supercut of just some of the COVIDians from 2000. It's just bad memories for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not the first time in history the medical people go crazy and start doing crazy stuff. So that's what they do.
Yeah, that's their business.
Well, you would think they'd be more logical and organized, but they're not. They're just they get these ideas in their head and they run with them.
Well, it's a blueprint, I would say. It's a business model. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, to some extent, it's an ideology. They believe something and they just go with it. And when there's data that doesn't fit their narrative, they just basically ignore it.
Exactly. How much time do you have? I usually go for about an hour and a half tops.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, because usually I just get sleepy and probably the audience is asleep too. By an hour and a half.
Sleepy myself. I usually do stuff in the morning, so.
Okay, great. Are you in the Eastern time zone?
Yep, I'm in Connecticut. I'm the same time zone as you.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm going to start her up without further ado.
We don't need me looking around. That way I can look less beautiful.
Well, I'm actually don't always remember to project the guest screen anyway. And the other thing is, I find it's distracting video of people.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to see me talking. I mean, who cares?
Especially if they're hand waving, because then you start getting distracted by that.
That's true. Okay. So I'll let you run the show, whatever you want to talk about.
Okay, I will do that.
Well, it is your show, so you're going to run it.
I am the showrunner, the producer. I do everything. So if I get distracted with a technical issue, please excuse. One of the problems with video, I stream to my own video platform and YouTube and Twitter, and sometimes one of them doesn't work. So sometimes while you're talking, I might be trying to get it working. But usually I don't waste too much time because it's hard to multitask. So let me go live here.
Okay. Well, we'll just chit-chat the way you want, whatever.
Exactly. And here's the intro. Everybody knows that the days... Okay, good evening, everyone. Hello, we're starting early today. That's fine. It is Monday, June the 3rd, 2024. This is episode 15 of my vaccine... COVID dedicated podcast that I call allshotsclot.com. The reason, of course, that I wanted to get something kind of catchy, and I wanted it to be one word or one string of words that make one word and not too long. So if you wanted to type it into your browser, you could easily find this blog. So it's called allshotsclot.com, and that's my final conclusion for almost all vaccines. And of course, now I think it's coming true on a worldwide scale. We are seeing clots everywhere and all the things that clots do, from strokes to heart attacks to loss of limbs and all the other endovascular diseases that occur when your blood is just being cut off, or your tissues are being cut off from oxygenation. Now, sometimes this is normally a call-in show, but I've also dedicated it to any time I can find a guest that I really like and really enjoy and follow their work. I'll bring them on, and I probably won't take phone calls because we only go for about an hour, and usually there's enough to talk about for an hour or so. So tonight's special guest is a co-author of a book called Dissolving Illusions, and I've been looking at this book for a long time, and I've been following the work of one of the authors, Suzanne Humphreys, watching many videos over the last 4 years, and from previous to the COVID's psychological military operation. And there's also a co-author named Roman Bistrianic, and he is joining me now, and he is going to talk about the book. We're going to talk about COVID's and just about everything else surrounding this medical mafia, this military operation. So welcome to the show, Roman. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining. I think I probably watched you last on Germ Warfare, and he was on one of my previous broadcasts. I really enjoy his style, and I thought you did a great presentation, so I figured if you're on the interview circuit, then maybe I can catch you. So thanks so much for joining.
Awesome.
I'm not always successful getting guests, because when they go to my website and see what I looked at and talk about, it's not always in line with their thinking.
I didn't even look, so I just took a quick peek, and that was it. So I didn't really look at anything.
Oh, that's fine, because don't look at it tonight, because I'm taking it apart right now because it's going really slowly. So one of the plugins is killing it. So I'm trying to figure out with my technical expertise what is causing it to run as slow as a snail. So you're not going to find much there anyway right now. But I'm a guy that looked into 9/11 12 years ago, and I haven't been able to get out of the rabbit hole since. And one of the wonderful paths I took was AIDS and vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID came along, and I felt I was quite prepared for this operation. It wasn't anything that I wasn't familiar with, watching all the AIDS movies and all that. And then Anthony Fauci came back, and we pretty much knew what he was going to say based on the whole AIDS operation. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, and how you, if and when you woke up. I assume you're awake mainly because you're
awake. Well, I'm sort of awake, although it's, you know, late at night already. So
yeah,
but I started my journey about 30 years ago. I was just a regular dude. I'm an engineer by training, so I have a background in physics and calculus and software programming and hardware and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, great.
Statistics. So, I have a background in those kind of things. I spent a large amount of my time creating rather complex software systems. Probably towards the end, it was a lot of medical systems. It's actually pretty cool stuff. About 30 years ago, I was starting to feel run down. I was at the end of my 20s. And I just wasn't feeling well. And I ran into some guy at work, and I was shaking. And he's like, well, you should read this book. And it was a book by Dr. Atkins.
Okay.
And I never heard any of his stuff. And I decided, well, what the heck, I'll read the book. And he was talking about a low-carb diet. So I said, well, I might as well try it. You know, I'm not feeling so great. And after a week, I felt incredible amounts of energy. I was like, wow, this is something new. And I thought, gee, why don't we know about this? We should know. Everyone should know about this. It's a big deal. And I happened to be working at a medical company, so they had access to a medical library. So I started looking through the stuff there, and I kept on finding lots of stuff I had never heard of. And I thought I was, you know, kind of well-rounded guy, and I heard a lot of stuff, but I didn't hear any of this stuff. It was on vitamin C and things like that.
Okay.
And so I found this guy on the radio. He was out of New York at the time, and I started listening to him. And, he had a bunch of different health guests and different things to explore. And one day he wasn't on the air anymore, and I found another guy on the radio because I had made it to my car to listen at lunchtime, and he wasn't around, so I listened to this other guy. His name was Gary Null out of New York, and he was very interesting, and I started listening to him instead because his topics were more diverse and more interesting to me. And he was a vegetarian vegan, so I said, well, let me try that too. So I did try that, and I felt better, and I've been doing that ever since. On his show, he and I had young kids. just brand new kids. And he started talking or having guests about neurological damage from vaccines. And I thought, wow, that's not good. And I, you know, paid quite a bit of attention to it. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I thought it was a type of rare thing that, you know, at least vaccines took care of all these diseases and we don't have to worry about them. So at the time, I thought, well, there's scientists out there working on better vaccines. So on balance, you know, these vaccines might injure people once in a while or kill them, but at least we don't have all these plagues anymore. That was my thinking at the time. Mm-hmm. But I was very curious, so I picked up a few different books. And one of the books I picked up was by Neil Z. Miller. And in there, he had a chart showing a decline of mortality rate for measles by over 95% before there was a vaccine. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. You know, this guy's obviously off his nut. That can't be true because I already knew that vaccines had taken care of the problem. But then I thought about it. I was like, I don't even know where I knew that from. But I had this idea in my head that, you know, they had solved the problem. But I, you know, I kind of ignored the guy for a couple of days, but I decided to go to a local library, check it out a little bit with some local, normal almanacs. And I found one on the third try. And they had data points every 10 years. I, you know, charted it out on my piece of graph paper. And at the end, I was like, wow, you know, this chart is basically correct. You know, how could that be? And I sat there quite a while thinking, you know, what's wrong? How could this be true? This is not something I know. I should know this. This is kind of important. But after a while, my belief system wasn't too happy. So I decided, well, maybe the almanac's wrong, but I better go check it out. So I went to Yale Medical in New Haven, Connecticut. There they had a big library. I walked in. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know they would let me in, but they let me in, and I found these books called U.S. Vital Statistics. And so I started paging through those, and I was able to find data. It was all in one spot. I had to go through multiple versions. I photocopied them. I brought them home, put them in my, you know, all this data in my spreadsheet. And then I didn't have all the data, so I had to go back again, and I came back again, filled in all the data points, and eventually I had created my first chart. And it was quite shocking because it showed an over 98% decline in death rate before there was a vaccine for measles. And I was like, well, then why are we doing it? I mean, why do I know this? I'm not told about this by anybody. And so I was pretty disturbed by it. And I also noticed the same thing for whooping cough. Whooping cough was down over 90% before there was a vaccine. And so that sent me on a quest of, you know, trying to look at all this data and try to look at why was that true? Why was there a decline in deaths before there was a vaccine? I always thought it was the vaccine that took care of the problem, but clearly that was not the case. I did spend quite a bit of time looking at this data and double checking and triple checking because I thought, well, maybe I made a mistake somewhere along the line, but it always held. It was the correct data. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, this just basically launched me into just doing all this deep investigation. And eventually I got data from England and they began data collection in 1838, whereas in the United States, they started in 1900. And that took a bit more time. Somebody sent me a CD from England. Yeah, this is old times CD.
Yeah.
And I was able to gather all the data from there from 1900, but then I had to dig deeper for the 1800s data. But I eventually got most of it. And I charted that. And that was even more shocking because measles was a big killer in the 1800s, it turned out. But around 1870, it started declining. And by the time they came out with the vaccine in 1968 in England, we've already had an over 99.8% decline in mortality rate. Mm-hmm. So basically, the problem was solved. Same thing with whooping cough. Whooping cough, same thing. A bigger killer in the 1800s, 1870, 1880 starts declining in deaths. And by the time we get to the vaccine, national vaccine usage in 1957, it had fallen by over 99.8% as well. So whooping cough also was not a problem when they started vaccinating, or relatively almost not a problem. And I was blown away by this. And so, you know, again, that's what got me going on this whole journey of investigation.
So you are, you got into, so I don't like to use the word awake too much, but it's the easiest to use. So you really woke up just because you weren't feeling too good, and it took you down a path of Gary Null, who yep. I have listened to. He's still in broadcasting, I believe, to this day.
Probably, yeah.
And so this was the gateway to you looking into your health. So you really went down the disease / vaccine rabbit hole first, just based on you not feeling well.
Well, yeah. So the health stuff brought me to the radio programs. The radio programs, yeah. You know, brought this to my forefront. And then the books, you know, tipped me over the edge. If Neil Miller hadn't put that chart in his book, I probably never would have done any of this. Mm-hmm. But because that really, you know, said, hey, wait a second, something's not quite right here. That made me go look. And then it was actually worse than his chart in his book. His chart was pretty primitive, but it got the job done. But I spent quite a bit of time making sure all the data points I get are very, very accurate. And it's just shocking because other diseases like scarlet fever, which was a bigger killer than these two, measles and whooping cough, went to zero with no vaccine. And same thing. Well, there's a whole bunch of other diseases that weren't really affected by vaccination, or at least not very much. So, you know, this whole idea that vaccines are the thing that saved us is just a mythology.
So what's your conclusion, or do you have any conclusions on why everyone's health improved to about a factor of 100% over the years?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different things that were happening. 1800s, 1800s were not a very good time to be alive. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of, there was no sanitation. So you went to the bathroom and went out the window. Uh-huh. Into your water supply. Okay. There's no pipe water. There was no labor laws or child labor laws. So people worked ridiculous amounts of time. 4 or 5 year olds were working in mines and factories, which is, you know, completely outrageous. Uh-huh. Air pollution was really bad because everybody's using coal. So you're basically not only living in a communal toilet, but you're also living in a, you know, smokestack.
Right. Yeah.
Housing was cramped and not very nice and filled with vermin. Some people, about, you know, 5-10% of people lived in these basement apartments, which are filled with your own refuse and animal refuse. Mm-hmm. It was not a pleasant, you know, despite what the movies show, it was not a very pleasant time to live. And of course, you're not going to be very healthy. Your food supply was, sometimes you were starving. Your food supply was not good. It was contaminated. Mm-hmm. You know, food was often rotting. So all these things came together and it made for a very unhealthy population. We also had crazy medical notions. From earlier than even the 1700s, they were bleeding people for almost every illness, which, you know, they bled people to death, basically. Uh-huh. So it wasn't a healthy idea at all. They killed the first president of the United States, George Washington, bled him to death. Uh-huh. They also used toxic medications like mercury and arsenic, mm-hmm. which just to clear out your alimentary canal or some other notions. They also used something called a hot regimen where they would keep you in a room super hot, which would overheat your body and kill you. So these diseases that were, if treated by natural means, would have been okay, would not have been so deadly. In the environment and the medical notions of the time were killing people by the boatloads. But it's interesting how statistics are kept, because people weren't checked off as being dying from poor or poverty, uh-huh. or the environment they lived in or the medical, you know, notions of the time. They were just checked off as, oh, you died from smallpox or measles or whooping cough or tuberculosis. Tuberculosis, by the way, was the biggest killer of the time. So, you know, they just would check off these box and those statistics would become like reality.
Right.
When the, you know, so, yeah.
What was the main symptom of tuberculosis? Because my mother-in-law, who's 95, worked in a sanatorium, I guess, and that's where the tuberculosis people went. What would have been the main symptom of that?
Well, they called it the white plague. They also called it consumption because it would kind of consume the victims.
Okay.
So you would waste away. So I suppose it depends on the severity, but they took care of that mostly with lifestyle. You know, all these things improved starting around 1870, mm-hmm. because we started having labor laws and they were started cleaning up the sewage. They started putting in piped water. They started having transportation slowly getting in there and getting better quality food. All these things changed. And they stopped doing things like bleeding and mercury as much. So they got rid of some of these foolish medical notions too. So
a lot of things came together in confluence.
Yeah, you had a lot of inventions, the flush toilet, electricity, big invention, right? So they started using electricity. They got rid of horses that were pooping everywhere.
Yeah,
that was the only way to transport things, and they replaced it with automobiles.
Right.
So all these things slowly came in at different times. And so by the time you hit the 1950s and 1960s, we were doing really good. Most people in the Western world were doing really good. It was nothing compared to what it had been like 100 years earlier. And so people were living quite well. They weren't, if you read some of the medical literature of the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, they're like, well, we don't have to worry about infectious diseases anymore. You know, we're fine. We don't have to, it's just not a big part of mortality statistics anymore. It's plummeted. So we don't have to worry about it anymore. We're doing good.
So when did vaccines start? How far back they go?
Well, it started back in 1721 or so, and that was the idea of taking some lesions from somebody who had smallpox, taking the material from there and scratching it onto a person. That was called inoculation.
Right.
And the idea was you're going to get smallpox earlier, and that way you get through it, and then you're immune. Which, of course, it didn't really work out that way, but that was like the first one. And it became pretty popular by the end of the 1700s. Mm-hmm. But it was still causing, you know, smallpox was still causing deaths. So this other guy came up with basically the same thing, but he didn't take pus from a sore on somebody's arm. He took it from a cow. And so that was the, you know, Edward Jenner. This was the notion of vaccination. Vaca means cow. Actually, he didn't even think it was from a cow. He thought it was from a horse or a goat. There was a lot of different notions where it came from, but that started in 1798. And when it started by 1800, it was already deeply embedded into the medical profession. It took off like a rocket. So people were quickly on board with vaccination. They just thought it was the greatest thing ever. And then they stuck with it no matter how many times it failed. How many people got killed by it? It didn't matter. They just, once it got embedded into the system, they couldn't get rid of this thing.
Was there any proof it ever worked? Were there any double-blind studies, or was that not even in the ideas of the medical people?
They wouldn't have had anything like double-blind studies.
Right.
When you know what vaccination was at the time, you realize that it's probably would be horrible for you.
Yeah.
So Edward Jenner thought it came from a horse called a disease called the grease, which happened to get on cows. Mm-hmm. He also thought it came from goats. Mm-hmm. Other people thought it came from different animals. There was a faction of people that said, hey, it's actually from somebody who has smallpox, and you take the smallpox and you put it onto the cow, and then the cow somehow transforms it into something else. Anyway, they would take these different sources of material and they would put it on somebody's arm and they would go from arm to arm to arm. It's called arm to arm vaccination. Uh-huh. And they did that for 100 years. That was your main source of vaccine materials from different people that had already gotten a vaccine.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like the clean, you know, little shot that you get now. It's like you go in there, rub some alcohol on you and give you a shot, right? Mm-hmm. What they did is they took a lancet, which is a sharp knife, and they would cut you repeatedly on your arm in these little checkerboard patterns. Mm-hmm. And they would do like five of those. And then they would take that material and smear it into that, you know, wound.
Wow.
And it depends on how deep your wound was, how much material you actually got into you. Mm-hmm. So, and in England, by the 1850s or so, your child had to be vaccinated by 3 months of age. So imagine taking your 3 month old and causing these little wounds on his arm.
Yeah.
And then taking pus from somebody's arm and smearing it into their wound. Well, nobody would do that today because it's insane. We would know that would cause sepsis and other problems, right?
Yes.
But this was the whole basis of vaccination. Mm-hmm. And there were doctors at the time that realized this is not a good idea, that you're basically putting diseases into people, which they were. But the medical profession was so enamored with this thing. They were like, no, no, it's fine. It's great. It's a great invention. We're stopping smallpox, which they didn't. They never really did. And so, you know, they just latched onto this thing. And it wasn't like a healthy notion at all. And once you know that's what it really was, you realize it couldn't possibly prevent any real disease because you're smearing random things into somebody's arm. And those random things were filled with fungus and bacteria as well, because there was no sense of hygiene. But back in the 1700s, they thought, well, this is just these little bumps on somebody's arm are just filled with virus. They thought it was just like these virus nodules, but in fact, it was all filled with other things in there too. So, so they were, you know, basically cutting and putting this stuff into the entire population over and over again.
So if everyone was doing so well in the 40s and 50s and just before the next wave of vaccines came along, what was the selling point of them? Why were vaccines still in the public consciousness as something that would make them better?
Well, certainly was in the medical consciousness. They had thought of this idea of vaccination. They were enamored with it. Mm-hmm. So by the early 1900s, they were still fixated on it, even though there was doctors that had rightly criticized it, like Charles Crichton. Charles Crichton wrote The History of Britain. He wrote a bunch of books, but he was tasked in the 1880-something to write an article in Encyclopedia Britannica about vaccination. And he spent the time not just like using talking points, like this is a great idea. Instead, he researched it and he wrote a very not flattering article in Encyclopedia Britannica. He also wrote two books on vaccination, which were not flattering either. And he was basically, you know, drummed out of the medical corps. You know, they basically ignored him. But anyway, that was in the Encyclopedia Britannica, and it was there for a number of years until the 1920s when they just deleted it and instead decided they're going to replace it with, instead of from vaccination, they turned it into vaccine therapies. And their idea was they're going to have these vaccine therapies for all sorts of things, from acne to tuberculosis, everything. They had numerous different concoctions that they put out that were all basically just junk. But they were just fixated on these different notions. And their idea was this was somehow going to give you some kind of disease and we're going to protect you from the other disease, and which oftentimes didn't work at all. But this is what their notion was.
How did they sell it to people? For instance, where did the money come from? Because that's obviously the biggest thing that's going on now with COVID and COVID. I call it COVID. So who funded it? Who paid for it basically?
Well, they made money from vaccinations from the beginning. So, and even inoculations earlier, some of these doctors became quite wealthy by, you know, selling their inoculations and vaccinations. Mm-hmm. So they were making money that way. By the early 1900s, they were still making money off of these ideas, right? Doctors were making money. That's how they survived. And, but then, this is the time of Rockefeller and they wanted to, you know, make more money. So they pushed for supporting these types of activities. Mm-hmm. And so they were always looking for new things to use their vaccine idea on, even though none of these things had to do with cows, but it was basically the brand name.
Right.
So anything that they thought was like a shot that was going to protect you from some kind of microbe somewhere, they called a vaccine.
And they've never had to show proof up until right to this very day that they actually do anything other than harm you. They've never been called out in 200 years?
Yeah, like 300 years.
300
really.
Years. In 300 but, years, no one has really called them out.
The only vaccine that existed for about 100 years was the smallpox vaccine. Mm-hmm. And right from the beginning, it was basically hailed as a great medical invention. But there were doctors in 1805 and 1810 that called it all out, said, hey, no. People are getting these vaccines and then they end up with smallpox anyway, or they just die from the vaccine. But the people that are promoting this stuff just kind of pushed on, and then they got a hold of the legislature and eventually made it into laws for people to have to get this stuff. And so it became quite pernicious. And once it became embedded into culture and medical culture, it just didn't go away, no matter how many doctors pointed out that it didn't work and it was deadly. So smallpox remained around until the end of the 1800s, 1870s, and then it became a mild disease by 1898 or so. It became less and less deadly and just basically faded away, despite falling vaccination rates at that point. Uh-huh. There were doctors in the Dr. Sydenham in the 1600s was saying smallpox is a mild disease if it's treated properly, which is something you don't think of. You think, well, one in five people died from smallpox. But again, we're talking about a disease, not how they're treated. They were often treated very poorly with hot regimen and mercury and bleeding. Mm-hmm. So this Thomas Sydenham, which is considered the English Hippocrates, mm-hmm. or the father of English medicine, he said, hey, this disease is mild if you don't do this hot regimen. This is a bad idea. We shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. So some people followed what he was doing, but a lot of people continue with this these bad medical notions. And when you died, just like today, if you die from something, whatever it might be, if it's a medical error, they don't write down medical error for something. They just go, well, you died from condition X.
Right.
So that's what was happening back then. So people would be listed as having died from smallpox when really they were dying from their living conditions and the medical procedures they were subject to.
Yeah, they usually just, to this day, put down the most obvious symptom. So if the body is, if the last thing the body is doing to try and stay alive is pneumonia, remember that word, pneumonia? Then it gets put down as pneumonia. Never mind that you've been poisoned or you. So what? After all your research, what do you think makes people sick? And I've interviewed the author of that really great name of a book, What Really Makes Us Ill. What's your conclusion?
Well, so the data shows that like measles and whooping cough, right? Mm-hmm. Or any of these other so-called infectious diseases, their mortality rate declined mm-hmm. by 90 to 100% before there was any kind of medical intervention, antibiotics yes. or vaccination. So clearly it's not, there has to be more than just about a microbe, right?
Yes.
And so it really has to do with your terrain, your health of your system. Mm-hmm. So if you're a healthy person, then any microbe that exists, you're not going to really have much of a problem with it. Mm-hmm. So most of it's because poor lifestyle, toxins you're exposed to, bad diet, mm-hmm. and bad medical notions.
Yeah.
So even today, the number three causes of death are heart disease, cancer, and medical error. Mm-hmm. So if you take care of yourself and stay away from the medical system for as much as you can, then you won't have so much of a problem.
So going to the doctor could be the number one killer of people.
Well, but most of the time, the thing is, there, in my opinion, they don't really teach you about taking control of your own health. Why do you have a problem? Maybe you should correct your diet. You're not drinking enough. You're not exercising. You're obese.
Yes.
All of these types of things that are going on. Instead, it's like, here's a pill for this. Your cholesterol's high. Here's a pill. This is not solving a problem. So a lot of it is basically malarkey. I don't think anybody should be doing these things, but it wouldn't be very profitable if everybody suddenly got healthy. So,
I agree.
I think all those things are the main factor.
Yeah.
If you're doing all the basically right things, you don't really have to worry about all these diseases. Just you live your life. Eventually you're going to die, but you don't have to be all freaked out about it because that's what's going to happen to everybody.
Yeah.
And the medical system relies on you, like basically just saying, hey, well, you need to do these things or you're going to die.
Okay. Let's talk about Dissolving in Illusions and Suzanne Humphreys. Did you guys co-author the book or did she write it the first draft? How did you get involved with
So,
her?
Yeah, I began this whole crazy project. After I had a bunch of data and after I had read a bunch of studies and books, I started writing things down into chapters more to understand things in my own mind. But then I'd realize, well, maybe I should share this information as a some kind of book. I hadn't written a book before, but it seemed to me that that would be a good idea. So I started working on that. And after, well, actually, I started it once and I gave up on it because, you know, life happens.
Yeah.
But then I rebooted it. And so I had been working on it for a number of years. And I was like, well, I better find a doctor if no one's going to listen to me. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I was going to find a doctor. And I happened to hear Suzanne on Gary Null's show.
Okay.
And she was talking about smallpox. So I said, oh, there's my co-author. I just, you know, I just had a feeling that was going to be it, right? So I gave her a call. She was working up in Maine at the time. And on the third call, she finally called me back. And she said, oh, who are you? She thought I was a quack buster giving her a hard time about what she was talking about. I said, no, I'm working on this book. And she said, oh, that's interesting. And she had me come up to Maine and I showed her my chapters. And she's like, okay, I'm on board. Let's do it. So we spent the next 4 years really working on all these different pieces, and it finally gelled out as a book. You know, there was chapters that didn't make it in. It was a pretty big undertaking. So at one point we said, well, that's enough. You know, we have enough stuff here. Let's publish. So we did. And then at that point I was actually done with vaccines. I was like, okay, I spent years on this. I'm done. You know, I don't care about this stuff anymore. I have other things to do in my life.
What year was that? What year was that you were done?
2013.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was done with that. I moved on to doing other things and, you know, living a life, and I have other interests too. And, but then COVID happened. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, it started. I was like, well, this will blow over. This is silly. And then it kept going. I was like, oh, really? Well, this is ridiculous. And I started looking at some of the data, and it wasn't, I was like, why is everybody panicking about this? This is crazy. Mm-hmm. But I was very blessed because I had done all this research, so I knew infectious diseases were never really a big thing. They shouldn't really be a big problem. You know, if you're healthy, you don't have to worry about this stuff. And that's what the data was showing early on.
Do you even believe that there's such a thing as contagion?
So the idea of contagion has been around for centuries. So they use that to explain all sorts of things, like even scurvy and pellagra and beriberi. Those all turned out to be nutritional diseases.
Yes.
But to those, you know, various people at those times, they're like, well, this person got it, then this person got it, and this person got it, right? And so, you know, they got the idea that that was contagious. But some of these other things are either not very contagious or, you know, but again, they're not ever the real big problem anyway. It has to do with your health. So even if there is some type of contagion, some type of virus, it's such a small part of your health profile that it doesn't really matter. Are things contagious? Some people say no, and some people say yes. We determined that it's not really that contagious. Like smallpox was not that contagious. Again, it wasn't, you know, if you're healthy, then you wouldn't even know. I mean, by the 1930s and 40s, smallpox is such a mild disease. It was basically confused with chickenpox. You know, it was just not a big deal anymore, and very low vaccination rates. So it wasn't the vaccine. But there's still mysteries like the Faroe Islands. Are you aware of the Faroe Islands incident?
No.
So in the late 1800s, somebody that had measles supposedly went to the Faroe Islands, and they hadn't had measles there for 65 years. And it seemed by this guy's report, as a really detailed report, but basically measles spread throughout the islands, and people would encounter people, and then 10 days later they would end up with measles. And the people who had measles 65 years earlier didn't get measles, but other people did. So that particular case looks like a contagion in the classic sense.
Yes.
But so I don't really know. I mean, maybe somebody has an explanation for that, but to me, it's not that important. I'm happy to be basically done with the idea that it's mostly about your health. You don't have to worry about these contagions. Even if you get a little microbe, your body will just take care of it. It's not a big deal.
So you don't think it's a big enough issue to discuss? Because if there is no contagion, then we don't really have to worry about walking around.
You don't have to anyway.
No, I mean, I'm not worried, but I'm just saying the average, because this is one of the selling features of the COVIDian experiment that's been going on for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was out. I wasn't afraid. I didn't really care. I was like, I went about my day, and you know, I was out in the streets helping some homeless people because they got kicked out of their homeless shelters, and they didn't care. They're just trying to get food and shelter. They didn't care about all this crap, and so they didn't wear masks. They were not very healthy people. I mean, because they're existing on Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, garbage food.
Right, dumpster
and so divers, they're not healthy people. None of them got sick. None of them died. You would have thought they would have been the first ones just dropping dead in the street. But, you know, they just went about their day and everybody just ignored them. So I'm helping these people. I touch their hand, you know, and try to give them some comfort and all that stuff. And, there's nothing happened to me. So I'm not really too worried about it.
So after your research, Art, would you say you're pro-vax or anti-vax?
I'm always pro-information, pro-truth. So I certainly wouldn't take something and stick it in my body based on somebody say-so. I mean, okay. I think that's – or I wouldn't even take medication saying, hey, well, we tested this, so we know it's good. Well, how do – no, I don't trust people enough to do that. It's like, you know, you've changed some blood parameter by taking cholesterol medication. Why is that a good idea? Mm-hmm. Does that improve my lifespan? You know, why am I doing this? And there doesn't seem to be any interest in improving lifespan. It's just like tweaking blood parameters. And I certainly wouldn't want to take something that somebody created, you know, very quickly or even over years and put a bunch of stuff in a tube and like, I'm going to inject this directly into your bloodstream. I'm like, no, I wouldn't want to do that. I don't trust people enough. It's a bad idea to put things directly into your bloodstream unless you really, really, really have to. Mm-hmm. Like somebody has to, you know, transfuse some blood or something like that. Right. Because you're bypassing your normal biological immune system. You know, everything's being bypassed and you're going right into your bloodstream. I think that's a really bad idea.
Right. And you did your research before your children were born. I noticed that I think you dedicated your book to your three children. Did you vaccinate them?
Well, that's a long story. I wasn't really in charge. So my wife at the time, and we were getting divorced too, you know, so it depends on the time frame. But she would just go and do it. So yeah. I didn't have any say.
But would you today if you were starting over again?
No, I would certainly not do any of this stuff. Yeah. Certainly not. Oh, no. Okay. I think everybody should have the right to do whatever they want, but I certainly wouldn't want to do it. I don't think it's this notion that we have to protect children from scarlet fever and typhoid and tuberculosis. And oh, wait, we don't do those. There's only certain ones that we protect them from for some reason. So, the idea that we have to protect them from measles, a minor, minor childhood illness. By 1962, almost nobody was dying from measles. In New England, there was only 5 deaths out of all those states attributed to measles. And Dr. Klenner took care of measles very easily with vitamin C. Mm-hmm. So, you know, vitamin C, vitamin A, you have no problem. But this idea we have to stop the microbe. Is just kind of just basically a crazy fetish. I don't think it's necessary, so I wouldn't do it.
Well, if your children are old enough to have children themselves, what would you tell them now?
The same thing.
It's
more important for your kids to grow up healthy with proper foods and be in a natural environment and be happy. And this whole idea that we have to inject toxins into you to protect you possibly from something in the future is a crazy idea.
Mm-hmm. Are they interested in your research that you've done?
I actually don't like talk about it much with them or anybody else that is not interested. So
really,
we talk a little bit. It's starting to come along. Well, it's a complex situation.
I understand that you have some, divisive issues there. I'm just curious because I have children and I'm convinced that vaccinating them before I woke up is the cause of just about every one of their problems. The more I research this,
yeah,
I don't know if it's confirmation bias, just reading some of the people that are rabidly anti-vax on Twitter, but I am absolutely convinced that almost every single...
I've met quite a few parents that their kids were destroyed by a vaccine of one kind or another. One in particular was basically, he was already in his later teens and he was, you know, on oxygen in a wheelchair. So these horrible things happen. They've happened from the beginning. Smallpox vaccination killed lots and lots of people. And, you know, basically they get a pass on all this stuff.
Yeah. I was only pressing you because I'm a father and my children are getting to the point where they're going to be making children. And it just, I'm sort of beside myself because I would hate to see them just duplicate anything I've done because we've been through the medical ringer. It's so disturbing that you take a perfect child and just shoot it up and poison it.
At the beginning. And it's based on somebody say so.
Yeah.
The government says, yeah, this is a great idea. And they don't provide you any evidence. The charts we show in Dissolving Illusions, you can go on the website and just look at the charts. They don't provide you those charts. They're not giving a full disclosure at all. They just go, oh, it's a great idea. And if you don't like it, you're an idiot.
No,
basically, that's it.
I know. I mean, this book and
look at that picture you just scrolled up, right? The thing, 99.8% down. I mean, geez, they don't tell you this stuff. And because they don't, they're not being honest.
It's absolutely so disturbing. I'm just beside myself. So that's why I was curious if you had any success in your personal sphere of influence, because
I have people that I know that, you know, didn't get lots of vaccines or any vaccines. But you know, it's all hit and miss.
Yeah. Well,
so
yeah, you're
people have to be open to it. You're going against a multi-century paradigm that is really hard to overcome, especially when you have a medical system that's so enamored with it, and they get angry if you go against it. There's some of them go, you know, really crazy angry. And then they start name calling. So to me, anybody who's getting angry and name calling doesn't really have a, you know, logical leg to stand on. They're just, you know, they're just raging. So, you know, I think everybody should look at their own data. You know, you can look at these charts and you can confirm the data. The data is spot on. As far as I know, I mean, I really spent a long time on it and other people have verified it. It's been 10 years. No one's ever questioned the data.
Well, they just, the best advice would be to ignore you. That's why I wanted you on the show, because I don't know. Serious. If I don't have an argument against you, I just ignore you and pretend.
Well, that's been the case for throughout the centuries. So,
yeah.
So there were a lot of doctors. There was Dr. Crichton, Dr. Cruikshank, Dr. Tebbs, Winterburn. These people wrote really great books on vaccination, and they were just ignored. You know, there was doctors that figured things out as they went along. They were pro-vaccine. Almost everybody started out pro-vaccine because they taught it in their little schools, you know, that this is a great invention.
Yeah.
And so when they had their own experiences and they saw, I vaccinated my children and one died and the other one's never been the same. You know, they go, oh, well, wait a second. This is not true. And then so they go down the path of, you know, I don't believe in this crap anymore, but they're always the minority. The majority are still making money and they believe in this stuff. This is back in the 1800s and it still goes on today.
It's just phenomenal. It's just, it's so disturbing. And of course I look on Twitter every day for my vaccine fix, as it were. And when I see our crime sinister, he's absolutely jumping up and down to this day, selling this poison. It just infuriates me. And then here's you with actual evidence and you actually went into the data, right? 200 years back, you show.
Well, I mean,
and we have this guy jumping up and down And just as a cheerleader, but you're the actual one giving the evidence.
Yeah, and I think you just saw something. Looking there, see those charts? Those are from a U.S. Vital Statistics in the 1960s.
Yes.
So somebody charted this stuff in the 1960s without computers, mm-hmm. and that chart, third from the left, is the measles chart, which I would create a lot of years later, many decades later. It's the exact same chart. It matches. And somebody wrote all these charts down, and they could see that all these diseases had plummeted to like zero or near zero. And so we didn't have to worry about them anymore. But, there's somebody always making money from something. So.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. Do you ever go on broadcast with Suzanne Humphries at the same time to discuss the book, or how?
Not too often, because we have quite a bit different schedule. She's on a different part of the planet, so
okay.
So we haven't really done that. We chat once in a while on our own personal kind of stuff, but
because this is definitely one of the most important books in my mind ever written, because you don't say it outright that vaccines are poison and toxic and will kill you and we don't need them and never have. But
I would say that we never needed them.
Yeah.
Certainly some of them are toxic and kill people.
Yeah.
Some of them injure people. Depends on the particular vaccine. Mm-hmm. Certainly the smallpox vaccine was really deadly and killed lots of people and caused lots of problems. But you know what? The people who control the data control history. They just like, well, no, everything was great. It was a great invention. It saved millions of lives, billions of lives. And instead of telling you the truth, and they just don't do that. And you can go read these books. They're available on online. You go always look them up, uh-huh. by Dr. Crichton and Tebbs and Winterburn. These guys wrote smart books with lots of information in them. And once you read a few of them, you're like, wow. Everyone should have read those, but probably nobody did back then.
Did you reference these in your book?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. We came up with another book called The Dissolving Illusions Companion. Oh. And in there, it has hundreds of doctors criticizing not only vaccination, but medicine as being basically a hoax. And there's also...
Is that on this website, Dissolving Illusions Companion?
Yeah. It's the one on the far right.
Oh, okay. Order books worldwide. Okay.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of, and in there is all the, there's like 50 or so books we referenced in the books. So you can just go find those books and read them. I posted it on Twitter, all those books too. You know, go look them up yourself. The website's a little mangled at the moment. It's being worked on.
Yeah. But, I'm just trying to find the Dissolving Illusion Companion one here.
It's right there. It's a...
This one here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, okay. That's the 10th anniversary limited edition. So that has...
It's a limited edition, which is colored, and the other one's the 10th anniversary edition.
Okay.
The one in the middle is the colored one. And then there's a companion that has all this other stuff in, including a timeline and all these references.
Oh, here, so, on the bottom. Okay, here.
Yeah, it's the website's a little scattered at the moment. That's why.
That's amazing. Yeah, people.
Yeah, there's if people went back and read, there's plenty. You can get these books and you read them. And they're a little difficult to read because from the 1800s, so the language is a little different. Uh-huh. But these people were smart. They were the smart ones. The smart ones wrote books. The other ones just kept on doing what they were doing.
One of the things that I've researched, I never hear anyone talk about, is a scientist named Claude Richet, and he was working on anaphylaxis. Did you write anything about that topic?
No. Nope.
Okay.
Did not.
Because he did an experiment 100 years ago. And it's quite interesting. Because are you familiar with the concept of anaphylaxis?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're talking about in this right now. So no, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, where I'm going is that he injected different proteins into the blood of dogs, I think. Mm-hmm. And the next time he injected that same protein or even fed it to them, they could not process that protein anymore and they had a severe reaction. And that's what I blame my egg allergy from, because
it could be. look, you know, injecting things, because they did this kind of experimentation all the time. Mm-hmm. They would inject it into the tissues of animals or even the brains of animals. And this is not legitimate. This is like crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's
voodoo. You know, they're not proving anything by doing these things. So they were just like crazy experiments. So there were doctors at the end of the 1800s or into the early 1900s that realized the real source of health was sanitation and hygiene and eating properly and getting proper rest and that type of thing and exercise. You know, there were a bunch of doctors that realized that, but they got beaten down by the medical industrial complex. So, you know, the idea of making money from things always seems to win. You know, there were doctors that said, you know, here, there's one doctor, I think it was from Connecticut. He figured out these medications were toxic. So he started giving people placebos,
right, sugar
bread,
pills.
Bread pills.
Yeah.
And he did quite well. His patients were improving quite well. He was quite famous. But then he made a mistake. He admitted that he was giving him bread pills, and then all hell broke loose. Even the people that were helped were pissed off because, hey, you said you were giving me medication. Yeah. You were just giving me bread, you know, so
they thought they were being defrauded. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was another guy who was, there's a bunch of these guys that figured things out, and they realized these medications are toxic, and they started doing more towards the lifestyle, but you're not making any money. There's one guy that was like, a patient came to see him after he had failed a bunch of doctors. And basically a short story of it is he said, hey, you're not chewing your food. That's the problem. That's why you have digestive problems.
Right. Yes.
And so give me my $5 and you're going to be on your way. It's the guy, I'm not going to pay you $5. You didn't do anything. I said, you go away and chew your food for a few weeks. And when you come back, see, you pay me if you get better.
Yeah.
So he did that. He went that and came back and he was fine. And he gave him his $5.
And hey, you know, the other doctor's advice. That's great advice. You know, I even think I eat too fast. And honestly, I think it is a source of health problems. I know I eat too fast.
Well, sure. That's a problem. But the point is, he got this particular guy got these different medications. And nothing ever helped him.
Right.
And this guy says, you know, you better calm down and chew your food. And he got better.
Right. Because that's
actually all the basic stuff is pretty easy. We just don't tend to do it.
Right. Life gets in the way. We get too busy. Yeah. Just,
well, we get brainwashed by society. So a lot of things we don't wake up in the morning and we're not grateful for what we have. So you have some gratitude.
Yeah.
And if you can't control it, let it go. And you got to tame your fear and anger and heal traumas. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And don't try to control the people, you know, just live your own life. And we don't like to do that. We'd like to tell people what to do, and which doesn't really ever really work out very well. We eat a bunch of garbage. We don't eat natural foods. There's too many processed foods. We don't hydrate. I see people all the time. They barely drink, or they drink soda and coffee.
I'm drinking water now.
There you go. That's good.
Reverse osmosis dehydrated. Now. Yeah, I know. And then just talking dehydrates you.
Yeah. And then people got afraid of the sun. You know, you got to get adequate sunshine.
Yes.
And be out in nature and exercise and establish good social networks.
Right.
And, you know, learn things and don't be afraid to be wrong. That seems to be a big sticking point for humans. Oh my gosh, I was wrong. You know?
Yes.
You know, we all find things that we're mistaken about and we just adjust course. That's fine. That's part of life. And then, you know, take some time, meditate, pray, chant, or anything, you know, get out of your head. We're so wrapped up with all this garbage that being thrust upon us, we don't need to do all that stuff all the time. We got to let things go.
Yes.
So when you start doing these and get plenty of rest, people don't get rest. They're not chewing their food. They're going 90 miles an hour all the time. You're not going to end up, you know, feeling too well. Your health is going to suffer.
Absolutely. And, right. Very simple
and then,
things.
And then you use plant-based medicines when you need to. I've used a couple plant-based medicines. It's just amazing. I actually accidentally old school vaccinated myself when I was cleaning out gutters, and I scratched my hand repeatedly until it was bloodied. And then I got the leaf and other junk from the gutters into my bloodstream because I was being stupid. I didn't realize what I was doing.
I just cleaned my gutters out on Sunday.
Well, don't cut your hand open and put the stuff into your bloodstream.
I use thick rubber gloves, believe me. So,
well, I was going to wear gloves, but I had to get underneath and I couldn't get my hand in there. So I just went bare hand. That was a mistake. 5 days later, I was shaking. I had a fever. I had body aches all over the place.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then my wife noticed I have lines going up my hand. I'm like, oh, she goes, oh, you have sepsis. I said, oh, yeah. Wow. I wasn't afraid, though, because I've kind of tamed that fear of death. Anyway, she goes, oh, I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. So she gave me a couple herbs. Mm-hmm. Within 12 hours, if I was better, 24 hours, my sepsis was gone.
That's very good.
Just using plant medicines. So it was crazy. She helped somebody else. They were on the liver transplant list.
Oh, wow.
And so they went through the gauntlet of a billion doctors and blood samples and everything else to make sure she was clear to get the transplant. And in the meantime, we helped her with drop dosing some milk thistle and other things. Mm-hmm. And in 2 weeks, her blood parameters were better. In 4 weeks, she was off the transplant list because she no longer needed it.
Yeah.
So boom, it's like, you know, these things are powerful if you know what you're doing.
That's really interesting.
And absolutely don't medicalize everything. Use Western medicine as a last resort. Mm-hmm. And if you get into a car accident, they're great. But don't use it for, oh, I got a headache, I got this. They're not going to help you. Mm. They need to give, you want to have somebody who gives you tools to improve your life and your health. Not like, oh, well, I can give you a couple pills. You know, that's not an answer.
Let's get back to vaccines if we could. No, it's fine that what you're talking about, but I want to talk, what do you think is going to happen in the future? I was hoping at the beginning of COVIDs, I call it COVIDs, I was hoping this would they'd either have to force everyone to take the vaccine, which they tried, or this would be the end of vaccines, because now finally they're vaccinating all the adults that can actually speak to every issue that occurs from the vaccines, where we mainly vaccinated children who could not talk, who could not elucidate their problem. They could not give any kind of feedback because they didn't even have that. They didn't have that development level yet. So now we have adults giving absolute feedback. So do you share my hopeful positivity?
Well, I would hope this
could be the end of vaccines.
Keep in mind, the smallpox vaccine was killing people by the boatload in the 1800s.
Okay.
And they still kept it as a law. It took them 100 years to get rid of the damn thing. Mm-hmm. And even after that, they were just, medical guys were still worshiping this concoction. And they still do today. I mean, so it's hard to get rid of a belief.
Yeah.
And this is a deeply held multi-century belief. Should it go away? Yeah, I think it should. I think it's ridiculous. Our health shouldn't be worrying about microbes. This is just an absurdity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your health is about, you know, your own personal health, and it's, you are in charge of your health, nobody else. You should be listening to these other guys.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen plenty of doctors. I'm like, well, you don't look like you're too healthy. you're overweight and smoke, you know, you looked really stressed out of your mind. So I don't think you're doing too well. Why should I listen to you?
Mm-hmm. Do you know anyone that's personally been injured or killed by the vaccine?
I know indirectly, and I've listened to quite a few interviews, and it's heartbreaking. There was that lady from a particular band. I forget which band it was. Maybe it was anyway. She got the AstraZeneca. As soon as she got it, she was like in pain, like continuously.
Yeah.
Like waves of pain over her entire body. And for some reason she didn't die because it was just horrifying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are suffering horribly. I've known people that just dropped dead. Not personally, but indirectly. So yeah.
I was just curious if you knew anyone really immediate that you could speak.
No, amazingly, all the people I know that probably got the things, because people just didn't talk about it, they didn't just drop dead. So I think it depends on which one you got and what was in it. And
yeah,
who knows?
Maybe different areas. I'm of the opinion that certain areas got certain doses. If you were running a giant experiment, I would think you'd mix it up and study the results.
They used to have that. They would send lots to particular areas, yeah, like the whooping cough vaccine. Mm-hmm. But after there was a big outbreak, I forget it was, or a big failure somewhere in Tennessee or something, they said, well, we're not going to do that anymore. They now they just kind of mix it up, so you have these obvious lot issues. So the, you know, instead of trying to fix problems, they, you know, try to hide them.
What do you think the purpose of this whole COVID military operation was? And I call it that because I think it was, there's a woman named Catherine Watt that really explains that this is a military operation, yeah, funded by DARPA. Well,
most of it was an experiment in generating fear. Mm-hmm. There was a guy in the 1888, Dr. Henry Littlejohn, he wrote an article. He was sanitation inspector for a bunch of hospitals, and he had a whole team. And he noticed after 25 years that his team never got whooping cough, never got measles or scarlet fever, mm-hmm, or any or smallpox or any of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And nor did they transmit it to their family members.
Right.
And so his conclusion was, you can't be afraid. If you're afraid, you're going to manifest the diseases that you're afraid of. So, you know, this thing has been an experiment in like terrifying the planet, mm-hmm, over nonsense, really, honestly. Right. Most of the deaths spiked up early on, and they were in the elderly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that could be attributed to lots of things, like, yes, vitamin D deficiency is like a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. There was one study I read that vitamin D, if your vitamin D levels were at the high end, you didn't die from the flu or this COVID thing at all.
Yeah.
And it's also based on this PCR test that they could cycle up to any level they want. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, like, one tiny piece of fragment of RNA, and oh, you got COVID, which of course is silly. And if you have got COVID and anything happens and you die, the reason you died was COVID. You know, so this is all just nonsense. And what was the purpose? I don't know. You know, was it all pre-planned? Probably, but I really don't know. Mm-hmm. Or it was just a bunch of blundering morons running around doing stupid stuff. I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Who do you listen to or follow or take information from on the internet on this topic?
I actually didn't follow much of it because I was busy writing. After we published a book in 2013, I was done with, you know, vaccines. I was like, you know, I got other things to do.
Okay.
And when COVID started, I was like, oh, you know, maybe I should, you know, kind of review what I know. And I just started doing more history stuff, and a lot of stuff we didn't put in the book. I was like, you know, maybe I should kind of revamp the book and put it in. So, mm-hmm, I wasn't really paying attention because pretty much everybody else was paying attention. So I was, yeah, just doing my own thing. But, you know, I wasn't worried about it. It was funny. I left one day to go visit my sister up in Massachusetts, mm-hmm, and I got out of the car. I'm driving down the road. It's like, there's nobody out. I mean, zero cars. It was crazy. It's like, oh, I guess everybody's dead. they must have declared a, you know, lockdown or something. I have no idea because I turned off the radio, mm-hmm, and I wasn't watching TV for a while now. So I was like, I have no idea what's going on. And so I got up there without any problems and hung out with my sister and went home. There was no cars on the road the whole time. It's bizarre. It's bizarre behavior because, mm-hmm, none of this stuff would actually work. Masks have never been shown to work. Lockdowns are just like this bizarre notion that somebody thought would do something. Of course, they don't do anything either. So it's all just people, crazy people.
So even though you've written one of the best books on vaccines and showing that they're of no use and disease was basically eradicated with sanitation, you're not really following some of the leading voices over the last 4 years. I find that really interesting that you're not.
I follow some of it, but, you know, I don't get buried into it because, yeah, it's all crazy stuff. Right from the beginning, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be a debate for a while whether, you know, from my personal experience and other people I know that were out like all the time and nothing ever happened to them. Mm-hmm. They didn't even get a sniffle. Right. So,
right,
for us, it was like, it was a nothing burger, but then other people had some serious, you know, people I trust, seemed to have gotten something and their whole, tribe got really sick.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's that? You know, is that some kind of bioweapon? Maybe it was. Maybe that's, you know, maybe there's different things that happen in different places. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I don't like to say conclusively I know something unless I really know something. Yeah. But I do know that there was stuff in the vaccines. Somebody I really trust also looked under a dark field microscope.
Okay.
So it wasn't just like some dude on the internet. I know this person personally, and they took some really disturbing pictures of what those stuff forms in those vaccines.
Okay.
It's like, you know, it's like, you know, kind of like almost looks like Borg structures, you know. I don't know what they are, but it's like crazy.
Yeah, we've seen some images. I'm not sure I trust them. Self-assembling nano.
Yeah, well, I didn't trust it until this person that I know very well showed them to me.
Wow.
So then I'm like, oh, okay, that's real.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
It's not just somebody made it up and threw it on the internet, because no, I trust them. And they're very smart. So, yeah, so they created these structures inside your body, or at least on slides, which I assume probably does about the same thing. And then so it's creepy. I don't know who comes up with these dumb ideas. You know, is it nefarious or just stupid? I don't know. Medicine's always been about doing lots of stupid things, but maybe this is something different. I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of quackery.
The whole thing's been crazy for hundreds of years. There, several doctors noticed or noted that medicine was the biggest killer of all. Mm-hmm. You know, more than war and famine. So, but that wasn't the majority view.
Yeah, Gary Null, who you listened to initially, did a lot of work on AIDS. Do you have any concluding ideas about what that was all about? Was it literally a trial run or a?
Yeah, I read a couple books on that a while back. There was one by Robert Root Bernstein. Okay. I forget what it was, AIDS, Rethinking AIDS, I think it was called. I'm not sure.
Right.
Anyway, very in-depth book by a smart guy. And he basically concluded that all these different conditions, they, you know, basically garbage canned under AIDS.
Right.
And then just blamed a virus, which there was plenty of guys that said, no, that's not true.
But, yes.
You know, once the government decides something is true, then it suddenly somehow becomes true for some reason, which we should never believe anything they say. It's usually the opposite. So don't listen to these guys.
And it was the parallels with COVID are remarkable. That's why I call it COVID. It's just AIDS 2.0. Yeah. It's AIDS for everybody, where AIDS was initially at least rolled out for the gay community, and then
it turns out they were doing a lot of ammonium nitrates poppers,
yes,
which destroys your immune system,
yes,
and so they would get sick, and then it was oh look, it must be a virus, you know. The first impulse of medical people, and this has been for centuries, is to think there's a pathogen. That's the first thing they think of.
Yeah, something contagious,
which is often wrong.
Crazy stuff. Do you have anything else that you're writing about or anything else in this area that you're...
Well, I'm trying to finish the audiobook and the Kindle just to get that off the plate.
Okay.
And that kind of thing. So then, and I'm on Substack, you know, kind of talking about one of my last articles was on that smallpox was, what if smallpox was a mild disease, which it turns out it was. So smallpox wasn't this big killer. It was mostly the medical system and other things like that was causing the problem.
You're on Substack. What's the prefix of that? Roman?
Roman, if you can pronounce it.
Mm-hmm. It's Roman Bistrianic?
Yeah. Roman Bistrianic.
Did I get that right?
Substack.com, yeah.
Okay. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for sure.
Cool. Yeah, so, you know, I want to finish that. And then with my wife, we want to create like a healing center or community kind of thing. It's all preliminary. So we haven't really made too much progress in that area. So there's a lot of stuff I want to work on. I might even work on a fiction book on Leicester, England. That's when they rebelled against the smallpox vaccine and stop vaccinating, and they live fine. So that was a big moment in history I think we should write about.
I notice you have a recommendation to Dr. Bailey and a Midwestern doctor and Steve Kirsch. I follow all those people.
Yeah.
What's your take on Dr. Bailey? And then what's your take on Steve Kirsch?
Well, there's the personal take, right? So she's you know, well, first I'll talk about Suzanne.
Talk about her.
You know, because Suzanne's a brilliant person. She's an honest person. She gave up a six-figure career to pursue this. She's just, you can't find anybody more honest and decent than Suzanne Humphreys. Mm-hmm. Sam Bailey, you know, I know of, and she helped us during the COVID stuff. She's a wonderful person too. Yes. So she's a really, really nice person.
Wonderful. And her husband too.
Yeah. They're, everyone's looking for the truth. Now there's a little, you know, difference of opinion on, you know, viruses and all that stuff, but you know, whatever. You know, people are always debate about things, but as people, these are really great people. Yeah.
You don't get bogged down on the virus, no virus.
Because to me, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It's not that important. What's important is your health. We don't have to worry about these microbes. You got to stop, you know, worrying about micro. So it's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's just a crazy obsession.
Do you know how's this? Because Suzanne gave up a lot, like you said. I don't know if I can interview her. I'd love to if you can.
She's often very, very busy because she's doing other stuff, and she's gotten her share of death threats.
Yes,
and so she's not inclined to do too many interviews. So she just did Dr. McCullough a couple times, but so
I don't, has she been quiet over the last 4 years during this COVID thing?
On and off. Depending.
So has her view ruined her life, would you say?
Well, no, I think, you know, sure, she could have been comfortable sitting in Maine making money
as a
nephrologist.
Yes, for
but,
sure.
So it changed her life, but I think she wouldn't change it for the world.
Well, that's great.
she's got to help people and met a bunch of people along the road. So no, she's dedicated to truth.
Right.
It's not about money. It's about truth, right?
No, that's great. It's fantastic. But you mentioned death threats, so you think maybe...
Well, certainly those aren't pleasant, right? You know, somebody says, hey, I'm going to come to your clinic and kill everybody there, including you. You know, that's not very nice. People are crazy. They think of crazy things to scare you.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, again, you know, we got to stop being... Back in the 70s, I remember... People being hypochondriacs was like a negative. Now everybody's a hypochondriac. It's like you're worried about everything. Stop being hypochondriacs. Stop worrying about diseases. You know, if you take control of your health and, you know, do all the important things, then you don't have to worry about all this stuff. You know, live a life. We're busy protecting ourselves from death, which is not going to work out.
What's your take on Steve Kirsch, another one of your people you recommend on your Substack?
Well, he's apparently a big fighter, so, you know, that's great. I mean, you know, how much dent will he make into the system? I don't know. But that's all we can do. We can try to, you know, just tell our truth as best as we can and see what happens.
Yeah, he's extremely active. Looks like he's given up a lot of his things he could be doing just to focus on this. I'm always fascinated by people that literally give all their time to a particular topic.
Yeah. I mean, that's good.
It's amazing. I mean,
it takes a lot of your time for sure. I know. I still read way too much vaccine history. I got to get away from this stuff. It's like, you know, I always find something new. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. You just keep on digging into it. There's so much that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And I wish that people would, you know, read some of these books and write their own books and write videos, make songs, whatever, to get this information out, and get it into the public consciousness so we can just stop this insanity. We don't need to do these things anymore. This is not the 1700s, 1800s, you know, we should be smarter. We have the data. We have all the information. We should stop doing these crazy things.
I agree. Well, I'm doing what I can with this show, And sure. I put a lot of videos that probably otherwise would not make it, or it would stay up on the mainstream video platforms, and I created my own video platform called FakoTube, FakoTube.com. That's really just my stuff, so I put as much as I can up.
Sure, that's what everybody needs to do. That's great.
And they should do it on their own platform so they don't have to worry about getting blown off and wasting all their energy.
Yeah, I'm on Odyssey as well. I do some videos on Odyssey and Rumble. And recently I've been putting that up on YouTube. For some reason, I used to get banned, and they're not banning me currently. So let's see how long that lasts.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm going to delete this video off of YouTube immediately because I just don't want to lose the channel, and I broadcast to YouTube. I just use that facility, but I'll delete this right away because I know we've said some verboten things, and that's why I've got my user-supported FakoTube, even though it doesn't get suggested at the frequency of a YouTube video.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still there. It's a repository, and I haven't lost a video.
Yeah, the system still controls what they can, so yeah.
Sure.
I got a couple of videos banned back in the COVID days. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, really, dude? That's my stuff is factual. What are you talking about? But okay.
Facts have nothing to do with it.
No. Definitely not.
Okay, well.
If facts were important, then Fauci wouldn't be in charge. So.
Apparently he was crying today or yesterday in Congress. This guy, he's such an actor.
Was he crying about? He's being picked on by too many people.
I won't listen. I just look at the headlines. Yeah. I can't. This guy.
Whatever.
He's just the personification of evil because he knows what he's doing.
He's made his money. He's made his BS. You know, just go away and work on Ships in a Bottle or something. Go away.
I know, but how could you carry on for all these years? He must not think he's hurting people.
Who knows what anybody really thinks, right? So maybe he thinks in his own mind he's the hero.
Well, he has to convince, because if you knew for 45, 50 years you were purposely killing people, wouldn't that eat you up from the inside out?
Not necessarily. There's a lot of narcissists and psychopaths. They don't think the same way.
But so their health is protected by their brain, because if you're
they don't look at things like in the same way. They don't have empathy. So if you don't have empathy, you don't really care. So you're just, you know, you're out for yourself. So
that protects them.
Those are a different kind of animal, psychopaths.
Yeah, they are. So. But you would hope that would kill people. Just to be so evil.
No, I've known a few people that are narcissists, and they go, "Hey, you know, you worry about all these people and stuff. I don't. I'm going to be fine. I'm not. I don't take any stress on about all the stuff you worry about." So, which is probably true. They don't worry about anybody else, so they don't care. It's interesting.
Terrible. All right, Roman, I really appreciate you coming on. I really am a big fan of your work. I think you're very understated, underpromoted. You probably have one of the most important books out there.
We're proud of it. I mean, we spent a long time on it. I think it's never been, the data's never been questioned. The references have never been questioned. And so it stands.
Is there another book besides your work that you would recommend, or are all those in your book, Dissolving Illusions, people can find?
I would go read Dr. Cruikshank and Dr. Tebbs from the 1800s and all these guys. And
old stuff, really old
and
stuff.
And Dr. Crichton, because then you're reading the real stuff. One of the reasons we came out with the book, I didn't find a good history book on vaccination. Maybe there is now, but that in 2013 or before 2013, I never found anything that I liked. Mm-hmm. So, had nothing with data in it. So I never really, nothing else really jived with me. And that was like a lot of years ago. So I don't really remember what the books were, but, so I'm sure there's good books out there. I just don't know what they are.
Well, people can start with yours, and you probably referenced all those books you just mentioned in your books.
So. Yeah. If somebody wants to send me an email, I'll send you the list of books that I read, and you can start with those.
Where can they get your email? Where can they contact you?
Just go to dissolvingillusions.com. Just go on there. That's the easiest way.
Okay. Can I have an email for you. Can I give that one out?
Sure. DissolvingIllusionsBook@gmail.com. That's,
yeah.
Okay. That's on the website too. So.
All right. I'll do that. Well, thank you very, awesome. Thank you very much. Very, very interesting stuff. I really appreciate your very soft-spoken passion for this. I think more people should read your book. Go look up Suzanne's videos as well. She's a really good speaker, really passionate,
yeah.
And really should be promoted. So I've done what I could, and
thank you.
If you want to come back anytime just to discuss in general, I know you have a presentation. What was the presentation on? Because it was on germ warfare.
Well, I talk about all the disease declines, and then I talked about 1800s life, which was not very pleasant.
Okay.
And then all the medical stuff. And then I go into depth about smallpox and kind of explode that whole myth that vaccinations saved us from smallpox, which is not true.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very good. Well, maybe we'll come back and do that. Otherwise, people can watch it on germ warfare, but... I really, really appreciate you and your work, and it's extremely important. And keep up the good work, and have a fantastic summer.
I will. You have a great day.
Enjoy life, and be blessed.
Oh yeah, definitely. You gotta enjoy life.
All right, be blessed, sir. Thank you.
All right, see you. Bye.
All right, bye bye. All right, there goes Roman Bystrianek, Dissolving Illusions. Fantastic book. It's been out for a long time. It stands the test of time, and you guys should go look it up. I will put the show notes. This show is on my other blog, allshotsclot.com, allshotsclot.com. That's where I put my vaccine and COVID information, and I hope you liked it. Maybe next week we'll do another call-in show where you can call in about your vaccine injury or death, first-hand or second-hand knowledge. I'd appreciate that. Otherwise, tomorrow will be Fakeologist Show with Lynn Ertel, the Lynn Ertel Show, where she talks about the events of the day from a fakeologist point of view. Now, I am tuning up the fakeologist website. I'm trying to find out why it's so slow. So right now, it's not acting perfectly and properly. But just be patient on that. Otherwise, the fakeologist forums at fakeologistforums.com, they're working okay. And of course, fakeotube, fakeotube.com, the video platform. And also, Adam told me that as a value for value podcast, I have to ask people to contribute if they think this show gives them any value. Apparently charities, their number one reason they don't get donations is they don't ask. So if you got any value out of this show or other shows, just go to fakeologist.com and click on the button to donate. I just got an anonymous donation of $1.55, which is a coffee. And he said Frank is great, so thank you so much for that. You can be anonymous. I will not get your name. You don't even have to write your name. I don't get any of your credit card information either, so I will not see your name if you want to be anonymous. So I'd really appreciate anyone for kicking in whatever they think they can. A cup of coffee is just as good as a case of coffee. So fakeologist.com/donate if you would. I would greatly appreciate it. All right, I hope you like tonight's guest. I'm glad he made it. And very interesting stuff. Take a look at his information. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary.